Thanks for downloading our latest episode. This was a very interesting episode. It was very intense, as things tend to get when children are living in tents. A quick reminder that our next live show is on July 2nd at the Hollywood Improv. You can get our tickets to that at upcloseandpoliticalshow.com. And please rate and review us on iTunes when you have a second. And without further ado, enjoy the episode. Thank you, and thank you for tuning in to Oh Great What Now, the weekly podcast for Up Close and Political. My name is Toby Morishanu. I am sliding just to the right to get into the frame of the live video. No one is currently watching because our one regular listener is working the camera. That's my girlfriend, Stacey Weinstein, in the background. I'm joined here, very excited to be here, with one new friend, one old friend. My friend on the right is comedian Johan Miranda.
Hello.
And so can you introduce yourself and talk about your connection to the issue we're talking about right now is immigration for this week. Obviously, it's been all over the news. And so can you explain your connection?
Yeah. I'm a stand-up comedian living in L.A. Grew up in the Bay. Was born in Lima, Peru. My family moved to San Francisco when I was three. And, you know, so I grew up undocumented, and now I have DACA, Deferred Action for Childhood Arrivals, which just got repealed, so it remains to be seen what happens. But, yeah, that's where I'm at right now.
Cool. And Brian?
Hey, my name is Brian Lockwich. I'm a physician about to finish my training in internal medicine and pediatrics. I'll be starting pediatric emergency medicine fellowship in just a couple weeks. And I have a special passion for immigrant health and border health issues.
Awesome. And so obviously there's a lot that's going on right now in that field. You were at the border, right? So what did you see that, like, I think a lot of people, you know, we've been reading about it. We've been hearing people talk about it on the news. What was it like to see what's going on there firsthand?
The truth is I didn't have a lot of experience beforehand in this, but I've always been interested in global health and looking to find a way to find it closer to home. And border health issues kind of came to the focus for that. So I went right at the inauguration of Trump last year, about January, February of 2017. And as somebody that grew up in Southern California my whole life, I was absolutely floored by what I saw, that there were immigration officers. I used to count how many I'd see on the way to work. It was a 30-minute drive, and I would always be in the double digits for agents I saw. The fact that even as a white guy, I got stopped multiple times. I could imagine how it is for minority citizens. And I was appalled by what I saw, especially in the treatment of unaccompanied minors.
Really?
I like to think we were better than what I saw.
What did you see specifically?
So the Office of Refugee and Resettlement, which is under the Health Department, whereas everything else border-related is typically under the Department of Homeland Security, I was allowed to go and see these kids that, in the news we've seen, they've been separated from their families, but there's a special law called the Flores Settlement in the late 90s that documents how children that are kept in custody by border control are to be processed. And when you go to these facilities, you know, I absolutely hate Breitbart, but one thing they did last year is kind of document the living conditions of these kids. It's so while they're awaiting reunification with their family, they're kept somewhere that's between a summer camp and a minimum security prison, and absolutely nowhere that a child should be.
Yeah, summer camp.
So I mean, we're talking so when people are processed by CBP, so there's ICE and there's CBP, and CBP is the official ports of entry. So people seeking asylum with their hands in the air, right, coming over bridges, are processed to these facilities. They call them ILRs, or ice lockers. It's because they purposely keep it 60 degrees to decrease bacteria, and the air quotes are for the complete bullshit in that. And the I just remember this story about a 20-year-old that was deposed by the ACLU. And she was pregnant from El Salvador, and she was told to súbete a la parera, to get in the kennel, which I think is an apt description for the places these people are held.
Wow. How about you? Like, what's been the reaction sort of in the DACA community?
Well, it's been going on for, because Trump promised to repeal it that was one of his campaign promises to Hillary on his first day of office, and he didn't. So there was months and months that passed where we were like, oh, I guess we're in the clear, and then it got repealed in September of 2017, and it's now like going to be another year passes by that's like it's up in the air. Mm-hmm. Supposedly, you know, there's an attempt by moderate Republicans to pass like a DACA bill that with, you know, compromises, but even that's like, I mean, I don't think that's going to pass, but I think ultimately what it's going to come down to is either late summer or in the fall, it's going to come down to the Supreme Court to decide where DACA stands. And it's a majority conservative Supreme Court right now, it's most likely going to like get mm-hmm. repealed. So yeah. I think that's the trajectory it's on right now. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But there's overwhelming support from both sides, from what I understand, for I guess two discrete issues, the pathway to citizenship
right.
and the protected status.
Right. Yeah. And there's two forms of bills that are being sort of considered. One is a pathway to citizenship, and one is just continuing the temporary status. And both of them have, you know, concessions that like limit legal immigration, which I think will even have a harder time getting passed in the Senate. And so it's just too many. It's just such a kind of a clusterfuck right now that even like there's no real like. I mean, I think in the next week they're going to deliberate, but like, yeah, it's very unlikely that it's going to reach all, like everything between Democrats and moderate Republicans and conservative Republicans. It's kind of unlikely there's going to be a bill that satisfies everyone. You know?
One thing that's I've been really disappointed by in the Democrats is the absolute lack of spine when it comes to these issues, that they'll rally because it seems like there's just such support among the majority of Americans that this is wrong. That mm-hmm. this is, mm-hmm. But how do you guys feel about concessions? Things like, okay, DACA will allow it, but then we got to fund the wall. I guess that's,
yeah.
Where's your line in the sand?
I mean, it's one of those things like everyone has their different answers, but I think in general, like I think cuts to legal migration is a no-go. I think because they're talking about ending lottery and like family unification, chain migration as it's called, mm-hmm. And that's just it's a concession we don't need to make, I don't think. Yeah. But as you said, Democrats have no leadership, and like mm-hmm. like they attempted a government shutdown that only lasted a couple of days, mm-hmm. and they like yeah they just completely succumbed to like. And got nothing from it. I think the past year in these kind of and even now with the issue of what's it called, the separation of children from their families, like the Democrats have still shown no like actual like you would think that they would jump at this opportunity to show some resilience, but there has yet to be.
It's because Trump proved it's their fault.
yeah.
So I think that's interesting. It's like I wonder if this will create the sort of critical pressure necessary to actually get something passed, you know, mm-hmm. in the sense that, you know, people always say like you only really get change when change is less painful than keeping things the way they are. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. So maybe now this is creating sort of an untenable situation and we will get something, but it'll be interesting to see, yeah, what those compromises really are.
We were so close and then Parkland happened.
Yeah,
right. The conversation switched to gun violence, and we still haven't gotten anywhere on that.
There's no focus.
Yeah, I'd like to think we could walk and chew bubble gum at the same time.
I guess when we talk about untenable situations, you know, guns still haven't gotten there, but they periodically, they get there every 3 weeks, and then, you know. But yeah, it's interesting. I think that it's like, what would the compromise solution be? And I guess the wall is one of those things where it's just impractical, you know, but it's sort of become the symbol mm-hmm. of, you know, I mean, it doesn't really make a difference if there is a wall there or not. I mean, I don't think it will make a giant dent in immigration because mm-hmm. there'll always be tunnels under it or ways mm-hmm. around it, or people can just come and overstay their visas or whatever and stuff like that. But is it worth being like,
yeah, let's just do it if that's what it takes to preserve.
Right. Give them the $5 billion and make them shut up about it and use it as leverage. But what I don't count on the Democrats to do is actually flex that, right? To say, we'll give you the wall. We need you to keep Sessions quiet for the next year, right? Or I don't know if you guys have seen this whole thing about separation of families, but Jeff Sessions was just on saying it's the biblical thing.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I just don't see where he gets off.
I don't know. When I think about what Jesus would do,
right. It's always in there. You would round them up, build the wall, right? I mean, that's he. Yeah. And I think Colbert just tore him a new one, and that was wonderful to see that. You know, a couple sentences below, it preaches a message of love as the underpinning for government and law.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, all those Trump supporters that are turning into Colbert. I'm sure. Done a real 180. Mm-hmm. In terms of the diversity visa lottery, I wonder if that's going to be one of the things that ends up being on the chopping block. Mm-hmm. Because that's basically what it is. If you're not familiar, it's like a lottery system. So from any country, you can enter a lottery and you have a chance at getting a visa or a green card. Mm-hmm. I can't remember exactly what it is. I think it's a visa and you have the chance to get a green card later. But it's not based on skills or familial connections or anything like that. And so that's something that Trump tweeted about a little while ago. And I would not be surprised, honestly, if that was taken out of a final bill in exchange for preserving legal immigration.
Then I say we die on that hill, because the truth is it's a drop in the bucket, right? Mm-hmm. It's hundreds of thousands max when we're talking about an undocumented population of over 10 million.
Yeah.
All right. So if we have to die on that hill, I'll take it.
What does die on that hill mean?
So to stop the lottery in order to further our agenda with things like DACA and a pathway to citizenship for the people that are already here.
Okay.
On the other hand, I worry about what is the message we're sending to the world with this wall, with this thing, with calling countries shitholes, right? Mm-hmm. The world is laughing at us right now because we used to be the tide that raised all boats, and I'm not sure we are anymore.
Well, according to Trump, the world is laughing at us until now. he was the one who made it serious. But, I mean, I would say, we've been sending bad messages for a long time. I mean, no matter who you ask, honestly, I don't think we should decide what we're going to do based on the message that it's sending so much as what's best. You know what I mean?
That's fair.
But, I mean, that is also the backdrop to, at least, my personal beliefs. It's like it's all talking about, compromising on things which are just not accurate in a lot of sense in terms of cutting down on illegal immigration is sort of predicated on the belief that it either, takes jobs or increases crime or something like that, when generally speaking, it's overall, a net positive to the economy and, they're less likely to commit crimes than native born people. So, at the same time, it is a democracy and you need to compromise. So
what it boils down to is what do you guys or Americans view as our moral responsibility to the world, right? The globalist versus nationalist rhetoric that I think is a large part in why Trump got office. But the truth is I was floored by the story. So the majority of migrants coming through Central America up through Mexico, because Mexicans are not the largest immigrants at the border right now, they're fleeing drug violence, right? They're, MS-13 cartels, the Zetas. Mm-hmm. They're coming from Guatemala, El Salvador, an area called the Northern Triangle.
Yeah.
Honduras is part of that as well. And what I just like all of us to think about is, what would you do?
Right.
If your family was in peril, right? What would you be willing to do to sacrifice to protect your children? And I think of this story that I heard in the back of the church in the Rio Grande Valley, that a 15-year-old was coming over unaccompanied, and I was asking her what medication she was taking, and she casually mentioned that she was on birth control, OCPs. And I asked her why, because she told me she wasn't sexually active. And it's because her mother, she's from El Salvador, knew intuitively that now we know there it's about a 2 in 3 risk of sexual or physical violence, especially for women, on their way through the migrant corridor to the United States.
Mm-hmm.
And in the ultimate act of pragmatism, she put her daughter on birth control, knowing the overwhelming likelihood that she would get raped.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought about being that mom,
mm-hmm.
being in that scenario where you're seeing the bleak future ahead. And whatever's waiting for you at home is worse.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right? Think about the things that would compel these people to go through the arduous journey, to literally risk their lives, mm-hmm. to come here, not only for the opportunity, but because there is no hope mm-hmm. where they're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
And what would we all be willing to sacrifice if it were us? And how do we forget that?
Mm-hmm. I was listening to something the other day, and it's talking about how since September 11th, the sort of the language of immigration is sort of set into a national security context. And on the question is, how do we weed out potential terrorists and stuff like that. And we lose track of the amount of people who are, you know, the victims of criminal gangs, not participants in them, who are fleeing them, and you know, the good that we have the power to do and, you know, are sort of not doing because we're afraid of, you know, the potential consequences. It is interesting at the same time, like, you know, is there a way that we can normalize the process to this extent where we can filter the you know, these asylum seekers and whatnot out from, you know, people who don't have good reasons, like, to come?
Well, I did your podcast like a couple years ago, and I mentioned like one of the guests asked me, like, why should we, you know, let or like, yeah. And I stated the position that, you know, a lot of this has to deal with the foreign policy of the U.S. government, which hasn't been great in Latin America. You know, and, you know, it's been involved in, you know, a lot of coups of Latin American countries and installed puppet governments that, like, exasperates the situation. And whenever I bring that up, the counterpoint is always like, why is it the responsibility of us to, like, you know, deal with, you know, whatever problems? And it's, and it's sort of a sticking point where it's like, well, if you actually want to, like, stop the flow of migration, you have to deal with what's causing the migration. And so, like, as Brian mentioned earlier, like, the stranglehold that the cartels and MS-13 have on their countries is, they're basically the government. And mm-hmm. so if we actually want to talk about, like, how do we deal with this problem, is like, well, not even foreign policy. Well, we would have to have a serious conversation in this country about, like, drug legalization and mm-hmm. to cut the source of income of these cartels and, like, MS-13, like, because otherwise, we're dealing with the symptoms and not the actual, you know, problem.
Yeah,
you know,
there's a number of you know, we think about, like, the pull factor of you know, America, you know, the opportunity being, like, a pull factor, but there's also push factors, like, you know, the gangs and stuff like that, and also I was, in terms of the nationalism globalism, we actually had a podcast on that topic, and one of the things that came up was, you know, NAFTA and stuff like that. Yeah. People think about it taking American jobs, but it also, you know, by basically eliminating trade barriers, a lot of the farming in Mexico became non-competitive and stuff like that. So, you know, farmers from that country sort of moved up to America to do seasonal labor and stuff like that. It's tricky that there's just so many problems intertwined that it's like, how to roll...
Yeah.
It's tough to roll them all back. Like, I mean, you know... You can eliminate drugs. Say you were to legalize drugs, for example. You know, I mean, we've legalized weed mm-hmm. in a lot of respects, and so there's less of that coming over from Mexico. But then yeah. they just switched to other forms of drugs or yeah, other yeah. forms of crime and kidnapping and mm-hmm. stuff like that. So, I mean, it's tough because it feels like a bunch of different threads
right,
that you can
right.
pull.
And it still doesn't deal with the wealth inequality that also drives people just
yeah.
escaping economic reasons, you know, for just the dire situation of that, you know. And, you know, yeah, you're right, there's so many threads where it's like, but I think that's sort of, but that's where we need to look for mm-hmm. like, as opposed to, like, sort of nitpicking about, like, that's not the actual
yeah
I don't know, but yeah,
I view this in two camps to avoid getting, because the truth is I'm overwhelmed with the practical aspects of how to roll this out. There's too many threads. So mm-hmm. I view it as the idealism mm-hmm. thing, what should we be doing, and the pragmatism side, how could we do it, right?
Yeah.
And I just don't understand, you know, as somebody born in America, raised in America, that has perspective from global health experiences on how amazingly lucky we are to live here. Mm-hmm. What did you do to deserve this, mm-hmm. right? And what did they do by, you know, roll of the dice to deserve their fate? And how are these fates not intertwined in a globalist society?
So we actually have a question, which is awesome. Thank you, Alfred Carcheri. I'm sorry if I mispronounced your name. I feel, as a person whose last name is all vowels, that I should have a moral high ground here, but I do not. But he asks... Quick question, why not simply put an Ellis Island-style mass immigration point in Texas, California, Arizona, New Mexico to process immigrants legally and efficiently? And actually, I think that's a good question. I think that one thing that hasn't been present in this argument, you know, it's just like or discussion, is like, what about if we actually funded the immigration courts and facilities, they could process people in under 2 years? You know what I mean? Like, we talk about, like, we need more money for Homeland Security and whatever. What if we funded Yeah, just something to improve the system that we have in order to be able to process everyone.
But that would be contingent on the fact that you want people here. And I don't think there's anything in Trump or Sessions' rhetoric that would suggest that they want more immigrants, mm-hmm. especially from Central America, right? Mm-hmm. They want immigrants that aren't from the shithole countries, that are Norwegian oil, engineers, right? I think that the vast majority of people come in undocumented doesn't have to do with the courts so much. I think there's other barriers that compel people to come over here, and I'm not sure that's the fix. Because if you could process everybody, what in Trump's discussion since his campaign would suggest that that is what he would endorse, right? Like, if you gave people a legal option, I think the majority of people would take it. But what one of the ways that they're processing people, and we should remember we're the only developed country that actively makes money off the detention of people seeking asylum, mm-hmm. right? That we have privatized prison corporations. They just got a used Walmart that can house over 1,000 kids. We're using military detention bases to house these people while they go through their immigration proceedings. And I'm not sure that's the limiting agent. I think it comes from a matter of, do we want more immigrants here? And I just don't see any evidence that the answer is yes.
And I'm glad you brought up.
Sorry, I just want to make a quick note that when I was a kid, I totally wanted to go to an Army Brace or a Walmart. Generally, those were where I wanted to go. So, but anyway.
Well, yeah, no, I'm glad you brought up privatized prisons, because that's a lot of what's fueling, like, and to sort of answer his proposal of the problem is, I imagine in that kind of situation, Border Patrol will be facilitating the process, there's many books on this topic, which I'm reading, one of which now it's like Border Patrol is not necessarily the agency we want to trust with dealing with this kind of... We're dealing with, like, children being separated from their families. And so
we should be relying on Paw Patrol.
So, like, the idea of giving them more power at this time is kind of... I don't think that's the... And to your point about privatized prison, and that's ultimately the question we got to ask is, like, who are benefiting from these kind of draconian militarized border? And when you look at, like, in Arizona, that law, that stop and frisk law, where the they can ask for your identification. And
they show me your papers.
Show me your papers.
Quote-unquote law.
Yeah, that law was written by the private prison industry. So mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, it's the whole, yeah. So this, you have to sort of think of, like, who's in charge and who's benefiting from it.
Well, I mean... I don't know. It's tough to say because, I mean, there's obviously this popular support that elected Trump who are not all private prison officials, right? You know? So, I mean, there are people that are benefiting, but I don't know. It's tough to, for me, it's tough to suss out. Like with the NRA, for example, people always say, well, that's the lobbyists that are benefiting or whatever, but it's like, but there's popular support for that, right?
Well, yeah. No, there's no denying that it's a great fear-mongering tactic. Mm-hmm. Like the moment Trump said that Mexico was bringing in rapists, I think that's when he immediately clinched the Republican nomination. There's mm-hmm. there's no denying it. It's a great tactic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like it's a difference of people who actually the kind of the fear mongering that people is effective, and the people who actually profit from, like,
mm-hmm.
I have they actually, like, it's a scam, basically. It's mm-hmm. the whole thing is a scam of, like, using fear to build a profit.
I just, I appreciate that private prisons are problematic in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. But I mean, like you say, like, there's a lot of countries, we're like the only one that does that, right?
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of other countries that are super xenophobic right now. You know, you go to Hungary and they're throwing up fences on their borders and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm just reluctant to say it's like the driving factor behind this rather than
I think what you're getting at is you're right. Globally, we're all going to, like, is this going to be this is going to be a huge problem, even bigger in the future when there's migration because of climate change.
Mm-hmm.
And what's going to happen is if we don't nip this in the kind of rhetoric in the bud, there is going to be a resurgence of far right parties all across the globe, because they're going to use this.
Mm-hmm.
Trump has proven that this is a very successful tactic
of
consolidating power through fear.
Yeah.
And it's worked, and it's going to keep working unless we kind of, like, figure out how to kind of combat that rhetoric.
Yeah. I think the ultimate solution is just to have a, a good system. Like it's so hard to do politically and everything like that. But I think that we need to just sort of acknowledge reality and have the short-term, you know, work visa program that people can get if they want to come into this country and work. I think we do need to do something along the line of Alfred's idea where, you know, we're able to process people and do so and just have a non-broken immigration system. You know what I mean? Like have a system that is as efficient as you would in your mind think that a first world government would be able to process things.
There's two issues that you guys touched on that I wanted to address. One is the complete autonomy that the border control has at the border. We're talking about a population that doesn't really have a voice, that the majority of Americans would never know or possibly even care what happens to them, right? Mm-hmm. And CBP, ICE, particularly exploit that, right? You have a customs official, because there's the TVPRA, and I'm sorry, I forget what it stands for, but it means that contiguous countries, so people coming from Canada and Mexico, can be turned around at the border, whereas people coming from lower have to be sent for processing. And it is this customs official call to see if you have a real substantial threat, right, to your health or safety. And I think of this woman I met, again, in the back of a church that showed me text messages because her boyfriend was a Sicario in MS-13 saying, if you ever come back to this area in El Salvador, we will murder your entire family. And that was deemed not a credible threat.
Wow.
What would it take?
Yeah.
And why do these assholes get to be the ones that choose, right? Yeah. Like what it concerns me, especially as we increase the employment of these people that are inappropriately trained. They need to get on the job fast, and they're left with in a staggering amount of autonomy just because nobody will know if they make the wrong decision.
Yeah, there's no accountability when you're not dealing with people who aren't citizens, who can vote and who can stay here to complain and all that stuff.
And the second issue I wanted to come back to as far as why I don't trust the system to process these things is because it is laughable how broken our system currently is. I think John Oliver did a great bit on this, the immigration court proceedings for undocumented children. So because they're not citizens, they're not guaranteed any rights under the Constitution. They're not guaranteed legal representation. So you have a four-year-old that's defending themselves at an immigration proceeding that none of us would actually understand, right? And this four-year-old, the gentleman in charge of immigration, all the immigration courts in the U.S., is on record saying that he can teach a four-year-old immigration law. It just takes time. It just takes patience.
That just shows you how impressive these four-year-olds are. We need them in the country. They're
bunch of wonder kids coming up here. I say let them come.
We have a question for Dr. Brian Longquich. Having seen the detention centers for unaccompanied minors, what do you think about their capability, readiness for caring for potentially much younger children separating from their parents at the border?
I hope you guys have seen over this past week in the stories about the two-year-olds taken from their mothers that were completely inconsolable, right? There's the AAP, the American Academy of Pediatrics, is coming out with a policy statement talking about the toxic stress that having ICE raids does to developing children. It turns out a two-year-old seeing his dad taken at gunpoint isn't going to do well, right? And I think it's hard because I've seen firsthand that the people there at the areas I worked, they really do have their heart in it for these kids, but they're strapped in terms of resources. There's only so much you can do. I don't think there's any scenario in which a child should be separated from their parents, even if they're awaiting proceedings. If we were to come up with the idea that they should be detained while they're awaiting these proceedings, and I don't like that. I think they should be released into the community. It has been shown to have deleterious health consequences, psychiatric consequences, mental health, PTSD. And it breaks my heart that we are using cruelty as a deterrent.
Yeah.
I'd like to think we're above this. And we, not only are we emboldened by the fact, but we're using it as a message to others to spread fear and hate.
Yeah, I just think of, like, the idea of, like, punishing children for their parents, you know, alleged transgressions or whatever, not to mention the fact that a lot of people are seeking asylum, which is totally legal, you know, is just, but the idea of punishing a child for something you perceive that the parents are doing wrong is just so fundamentally evil, you know? It's like, that's like what bad guys do. Yeah. Why are we doing that?
And it's against the Geneva Convention. It's it's illegal, right? Despite what Sessions says about it being the biblical thing to do. I just can't imagine Jesus would endorse this current strategy.
Yeah. Well, to be fair, God did like tell someone to kill their own kid at one point. So
he pulled back at the last minute. He changed his mind.
Wow, heavy stuff. And by the way, yeah, just a reminder, we've been taking some questions. So if you're watching, you want to drop one in the comments, feel free to do so. So as a DACA recipient now, like, so you were able to work for a while. Are you not able to work now?
It's still valid right now. So I'm able to work. I'm living life as if, you know, nothing happened. Yeah.
Well, it's also interesting because, I mean, obviously there's the big thing where, you know, people were nervous about registering for DACA because, you know.
Yeah.
On a list, yeah.
No, that was a real, like, I remember when it first came out in 2012, I've talked to a couple of, you know, people in my situation as well who were eligible, and they were like, I don't want to like put my name on a register national way and give them my fingerprints and address. And I was like, Which at the time I was like, oh no, don't worry, I'll never. I was the one being like, no, trust the government, like it'll. And then it turns out.
All right, is there an element of like, hey, told you so?
It turns out Trump doesn't have a problem with negative.
Yeah. So, but yeah, that was a real thing for sure.
Do you, if you could do it again now, would you have registered?
Still, I would still register because the past, 4 or 5 years have been great for me. Mm-hmm. Like, just being able to live on my own and, just live my life, basically. Before then, I was staying with my folks and just, like, I didn't know what future I had. But at least with DACA, I had some, you know. I guess it's like, is it better to have loved and lost and never loved at all? That's sort of the question. And yeah. I think it's better to have loved and lost. And also it's you know, it, I also just feel it makes it harder. Like if I hadn't signed up, like I'm glad we all signed up because now it just makes it harder for them to take it away. You know?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know?
But the truth, so if we have 10, 11 million undocumented people, and I'll exclude DACA recipients from that, it would take stormtroopers to deport everyone. So I think they're going for the next best thing, and it's to sow chaos and fear, right? To do ICE roundups at 7-Eleven, to go into apartment complexes saying, we're just looking for the bad guys, but if you don't have your papers, you're going to Guatemala too, right? And talking about paying for the sins of our parents, when we're talking about DACA recipients, I love that Obama phrased this as they are Americans in every sense of the word except papers, right? Mm-hmm. That these are our children, now young adults, that could have been in the States for over a decade, that might not even speak their native language from where they came from, that know no other society than America. Mm-hmm. And we can just drop them off in El Salvador because that's where they came from.
Well, to be fair, you did say your brother is rooting for Peru in the World Cup.
So. My cousin is, yeah. Yeah, where's the loyalty?
Well, I think the right thing to do is wait until America has a team in the World Cup. Is he, have you been able, is he leaving the country or not? You able to leave the country and come back?
Me? There was a process called advanced parole where you could visit if there's like an emergency, like if relative is dying and you want to visit them, you can apply. But that's out of the table right now. So right now I can't leave the country. Wow.
Make up your mind. Can I leave? Can I come here?
Yeah.
Do you have any, do you feel any connection to Peru at all?
I left when I was 3, so I don't have any actual memories of it. I mean, I would love to visit at some point, but but if I ever do visit, it'll be as a tourist.
Yeah,
I'll be like, as anyone else,
totally.
I'd be like, yeah. Mm. So yeah, as far as I don't know, I not to the actual country itself. I mean, obviously, I grew up with the culture and a bit with my parents and the food and the music, but I'm not nostalgic about it because I just don't remember it. Really.
Yeah, yeah, makes sense.
Yeah,
cool. And you said you had worked in Peru as well.
Yeah, I took a year off before med school and worked for a wonderful organization called Partners in Health, based in Lima. They primarily do TB care. Mm-hmm. And the truth is, if I could give two things to my kids, right, I hope to be a father soon, that it would be tenacity to pick themselves up when I'm not there, and perspective on how extraordinarily fortunate we are and how the vast majority of people all over the world live in conditions that we would frankly find unacceptable. And it is, I view it as our moral obligation to help those, right? Because I believe in a life of service.
Yeah.
What you just said is that's the hardest thing, because I was on Twitter, I was looking up like what the latest on the like separated children, and it was mostly like, oh, we need to like reunite the families. But every now and then I saw a tweet that was literally like, so I'm supposed to feel bad about these children separated when their parents, you know, took, like, it's that's the hardest thing, is trying to convince people that they should care about human beings is like impossible. Like,
right.
it's just,
I'm not sure I can put that in, right? I can't make you give a shit.
Yeah.
But part of our job is to peel back the curtain, you know, as a middle-class white guy, an American, there's very little Trump can do to hurt me, but, and I can't do anything about the privilege I was born with, except to use it as leverage to advocate for others, right? Mm-hmm. And that's where I'm coming in as a pediatrician, saying to tell a mother that we're going to go take your kid for a bath and then not allow them to see them for 3 months.
Yeah,
it is abhorrent. It is beneath us. We are a nation built and perpetually fueled by the dreams of immigrants. Mm-hmm. And to pretend otherwise is disingenuous to what we are as Americans.
So on the one hand, I mean, I completely agree with that. I believe that, like, if you have something good, like, you know, this great country, you know, the greatest country in the world, as we like to say, you should share it. Like, invite more people here. That's the kind thing to do, and it also has the benefit of being like good for the economy and necessary in a lot of areas we were talking about earlier, where people are aging and you don't have young people who are working. And to try to restrict it is, I think, bad on a number of levels. On the other hand, like, I do understand that there's this fear where it goes to like open borders and stuff, right? Like that. Or it's
look at Germany in the Syrian crisis, right? Mm-hmm. They're stretched to the limit.
That worries people. Is like, we're eventually going to have to say no to someone, right? As a matter of practicality. So how do you determine who you say no to, and how do you determine, or how do you do some level of a job of stopping the people who, you know, are in MS-13 or whatever from coming here?
Yeah, the open borders is kind of the bogeyman of the slippery slope of, like, you know, kind of like with gay marriage, like, well, then we're going to be marrying turtles. And like, it's the most frustrating part, because I'm not pro immigration. That's the thing about it, is I'm not like saying we should be like, like, in an ideal world, I would like, people wouldn't have to migrate under these conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we're asking, like, it's asking the wrong questions. I feel like it's not like how many should we take. It's why are they coming? Mm-hmm. Like to come under these conditions, especially through the border, which is like you're facing like death and rape. And like, mm-hmm. what causes people to really take on those, you know, risks? And it's, and then it boils down to like either economic or just like violence at home. And mm-hmm. so, I don't know. In an ideal world, I would love open borders. But obviously, that's not what I don't think I'm going to see that in my lifetime. So mm-hmm. I never bring it up. Like, because it's like utopian almost to bring it up at considering the circumstances, because there's so many. You can't really have open borders without also like taking into consideration of like the wages, and so, and then you have to have a discussion of like, well, that's going to contribute to wealth inequality, but what actually contributes to wealth inequality right now is like, you know, obviously the consolidation of wealth, which, you know, I don't know, it's such a big, like, in order to even talk about open borders, you can't just, opening the borders alone isn't possible. You would have to like really overhaul the whole system. So it's really hard to talk about.
How do you guys feel about like a meritocracy kind of system? You know, one of the things I think every nation is empowered to be self-serving in mm-hmm. who they let come over, yeah. that it helps their workforce, it helps their population in some regard. How do you guys feel about the taking engineers from all comers or academics or things like that? But then I think of the refugees in Syria, and a large percentage have graduate degrees, mm-hmm. right? And we're not raising a clamor saying they need to come over.
That would be like a good slogan, like refugees got degrees, you know, let us in. I mean, I think that there should be more skilled immigration in general. I mean, my background's in tech. I worked at Microsoft. And one of the stories which I tell is that we literally built another office center around across the border in Canada because we just wanted engineers and they couldn't get visas there. And it was just so frustrating to me because now these brilliant people from all over the world, they're going to Canada, they're paying Canadian taxes, they're raising their kids there, they're starting businesses there eventually. And the only reason is because they can't get this piece of paper that allows them to do all that stuff in America. And I mean, I guess it's ostensibly to protect the American worker, but like I am an American worker. And if you have a computer science degree and are qualified to work at Microsoft, you have no problem getting a job anywhere that pays well. And so it's just shooting ourselves in the foot. Yeah. So I think there should be more. I mean, it's tough because there's like all these kinds of discussions that all get tied into the immigration discussion. You know, should we have more, you know, skilled visas? I think so. But then that gets tied into what about, you know, are you reducing other visas or, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, I mean, I think there should be more skilled immigration.
Especially for underserved areas, right? So we could bolster the deficit. Let's say there weren't enough civic engineers, right? Mm-hmm. We take people from with that kind of training while we're bolstering our system to train more Americans to do these jobs. But one example I think of are international medical graduates, right? The people looking to get their licensing in the United States typically fill the void in places that other physicians don't want to work, right? In the middle of California, in the Midwest, right? If you can't get an American doctor there, you get an international medical graduate. And that's not to say that their training is in any way inferior, but that the chance for opportunity is enough for them to work places that I wouldn't want to work.
That's actually how I think Aziz Ansari ended up in South Carolina. Yeah. Because his parents were doctors, I believe, who were sent to, I think, Alabama at first and then, like, South Carolina. But, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of places. I mean, my girlfriend was telling me the other day, like, I could earn way more money if I worked in Bakersfield because they just don't have people in Bakersfield.
But then you'd have to live in Bakersfield.
Yeah.
Just kidding, Bakersfield, if you're listening.
Yeah, I don't know how our listenership is in Bakersfield. But you can't divide by zero, so.
It's tough, and a lot of these areas are also, like, you know, Bakersfield, like, was the center of the oil industry for a long time, and there's a lot of birth defects over there. And so, you know, you have even more need in a lot of cases than you would have in other areas, but not enough people to serve them.
But so if I can't tug at people's heartstrings, then I tug at their purse strings and say, regardless of how you feel about immigrants, how do you feel about having bridges that don't collapse, right? And if we can't fill that void, what harm is it to you to get people that can, right? How do you not benefit from immigration in this regard?
What if we just put the detention centers under bridges? Ooh. So we're building more. We're popping up the bridge. I know, what do you think? What's your take on that?
About
like skilled immigration versus.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's in everyone's best interest to have. Yeah, I don't see why that's even an issue. Like, what are people's arguments that it lowers wages or what?
I think, I mean, there's one thing where it's tough because there are ways that people abuse the system a little bit. Like Infosys is sort of notorious for bringing people over on temporary, on like H-1Bs or whatever, and they're just call center workers and stuff like that. So there are abuses in the system, but I think the response is to reform it rather than to be like, oh, we got to make cuts, you know, because there's obviously tons of ways in which it's used legitimately and to the benefit of, you know, America and immigrants alike.
But perhaps it's my disenchantment or just being jaded with the conversation we're having as a country, but I don't think these are the barriers. I think the people that are staunchly anti-immigrant, that believe that Mexico is actually sending rapists and murderers, I don't think it's the data that compels them. I think it's emotion. Right? Yeah. And that was to what you spoke of earlier, Johan, the Trump's talent. Is galvanizing that fear and utilizing it for his own purposes.
Yeah, it's not a genuine principled stance because, you know, for the longest time, the rhetoric was, you know, we're against illegal immigration. We're totally fine with legal immigration. And then now Trump's like specifically trying to cut legal migration, with chain migration or a little louder, and no problem at all. They're like, yeah. Oh, so it was never about that kind of difference. It was just in general that emotion mm-hmm. of like whatever they fear they're losing or whatever, you know, it's exactly what it's about.
Yeah. I always love that. Like, we love legal immigrants. We just want like 50% less of them.
Yeah. Where I'm coming at this from is the idea that your opinion is on the same table as world consensus expert opinion, right? Like the whole idea that you're entitled to your own opinions, but not your own facts. Mm-hmm. I deal with this daily because I know our only chance is to reach across the aisle to try to talk to the minority / majority that got Trump elected that feel ignored mm-hmm. and say, like, we're here to listen. How do we change this, right? On the other hand, if there's no amount of data that will allow you to believe in climate change, mm-hmm. I'm not sure you deserve a seat at the adult table.
Yeah.
Well, I think it's like, and you know, I've spent time, you know, in conversations and stuff like that and reading stuff online to try to understand it. And I do, like, you know, I think there's certain sets of values that I think create a larger sense of outrage in, you know, particular instances, like when, you know, in San Francisco, whatever, someone gets murdered by an illegal yeah. immigrant, and it's like, they shouldn't have even been here. And they, right, you know, right. And so it's, even though it's not a common occurrence, or though, you know, if you're flooded by these stories, you might think it's more common occurrence. Absolutely. It's like it creates that sense of indignation and rage. You know, I mean, similarly, I do, you know, I can believe the data and the studies that I read, but I, you know, I can understand why people who are blue collar workers who are saying, like, well, you know, I'm have to compete against these companies that are hiring, you know, illegal immigrants to do construction, and I can't compete with them, or, you know, stuff like that. Like, I have sympathy for that in theory. But I do also feel like it's, whenever I'm in the position of making a better argument for someone than they're ever making for themselves, I feel like it's, that's not what I feel like people are saying. What they're saying is, you know, immigrants are lots of MS-13 and yeah. they're coming over, and, you know, we got to keep our kids safe and stuff like that. And it's, you know, it just totally ignores the.
And you can empathize with those in the Fox News echo chamber, right? Yeah. That I get it, because you're right. They don't talk about all the wins of successful immigrants, right? The fact that something like half or two thirds of Silicon Valley wasn't born in the United States, right? And they bring up the losses, like the guy that should have been repatriated 6 times or something and ended up killing somebody. But that is just fear rhetoric. And on one hand, I get it, because if that's all you're seeing, but on the other hand, what is your personal responsibility to get accurate information? Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that fear mongering, it results often in, because it never results in like smart policy. It just results in disastrous, like even with that specific case of the documentary immigrant who killed
Kitty Steinle, I think,
something like that. Yeah, and he like got off, and it was such a backlash in, you know, the Fox News, and like they ran it for like and this sort of speaks to Democrats. They bowed to like the mayor at the time, Gavin Newsom, mm-hmm. who might be our next governor. Yeah. He bowed to the pressure, and he as a way to like sort of, he created this policy of that resulted in like undocumented youth in juvie mm-hmm. being transferred to ICE. So this policy like transferred 167 like teenagers mm-hmm. who probably, like, you know, they, well, I don't know what they did, you know, during juvie, right? But mm-hmm. then they got transferred to ICE, and so it's like, and this is our liberal like fucking mm-hmm. sanctuary city guy, and he bowed to pressure. Mm-hmm. So it's like the fanning of the flames whenever one of these stories happens, it's just, it results in catastrophic, like,
and their agenda is so apparent. Right. Anybody that doesn't watch Fox News regularly that turns it on for 10 minutes says this is state propaganda.
Yeah. So I mean, we're going to wrap up soon, but I wanted to, I guess, ask you about the sanctuary city thing, since you lived in San Francisco, which is a sanctuary city. And what exactly is the effect that it has? And, you know, what do you see the benefit being, or the effects being?
So sanctuary city is basically if you're in, whatever your interaction with the local police is, they're not going to transfer you to ICE.
Okay.
So whatever you do, you'll just be handled by the local police. You go to jail or whatever, mm-hmm. or, and the result is less crime, really, because people, the undocumented or just immigrant communities are more willing to cooperate with the local police. And what I've seen some, I forget where I read it, but in places where there aren't sanctuary cities, there's a higher spike of domestic violence mm-hmm. because, you know, undocumented women or immigrant women are just, they're not comfortable seeking help to the police.
Yeah.
And then, so it's just, it makes a already kind of vulnerable community even more vulnerable.
Yeah.
And
then someone's also going to have that threat that they can hang over their head.
Exactly.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's actually something that Jeff Sessions threatened mm-hmm. sanctuary cities or sanctuary states with, is that they weren't going to get federal funding unless they chose to cooperate with mm-hmm. ICE and CBP. Gotcha. But you're absolutely right. I feel it too from the healthcare side that my patients are worried that I'm reporting them to ICE, right? Mm-hmm. And they're not coming to clinic, and they'll wait till it's too late to come to emergency rooms. Mm-hmm. And even if you don't believe that immigrants or undocumented people should get healthcare, solely from a financial perspective, mm-hmm. it's a lot easier to give metformin and oral diabetes medicine than for them to come in crisis in a coma from diabetes in the ER. It's 15 times more expensive.
Mm-hmm. I was briefly, funny story, I guess, in retrospect, but I was briefly an illegal immigrant in England. Long story, but it was nerve-wracking. Like, I was actually robbed at one point, and not in person, but someone like stole my stuff from a hostel and stuff like that. And I was like, can I go to police? I don't know. You know, like, are they going to ask to see my passport or documentation? Mm-hmm. I don't know. And so that just that uncertainty creates this like reluctance to use all kinds of, you know, services that you use more than you think and you take for granted. And it is just like sort of a really, you feel like you're on a knife edge all the time, you know, because you don't know if you're going to just make a mistake and end up having to be detained or go home or whatever. Yeah. On that uplifting note, some shows are more humor and some shows are more like serious, but I think this is a serious topic. And I think it's
your guys' job is the joke. So
I think it's important to talk about. So I'm glad we did. Thank you guys both for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me on.
Cool.